Abercrombie denim is everything right now. Denim should feel like this. Confident, easy, like your butt has never looked better. If you didn't know, Abercrombie's Curve Love denim went viral for eliminating waist gap, and it's still a game changer. Between that and their classic fits with a straighter line from waist to hip, the perfect denim does exist. Shop Abercrombie denim in the app, online, and in-store.
Hey, Immigrantly family, this is Sadia Khan. I have some great news for all of you. We recently launched our newsletter, which comes out 3 times a week. It's called Hyphenly, which is our no-fluff newsletter with hot takes, heartfelt stories, and all the feels of living in between cultures. Come for the nuance, stay for the vibes. You can find the link to subscribe in our show notes. Don't forget to subscribe. Hello and welcome back to Immigrantly. I'm your host, Sadia Khan. Now, our frequent listeners know this. I've had the chance to sit down with more than 300 people over the years, some already well known, others who became known later, and many whose stories just stayed with me. Which means, guys, if you haven't listened to all those incredible episodes, after you've listened to this one, go back and check out those incredible stories. Usually, I find my guests through recommendations or my own curiosity, which, by the way, reminds me, if you have a guest in mind for Immigrantly, please reach out to me. I'm looking for new guests. You can reach out to me on my email, which is sadia@immigrantlypod.com, my new Instagram, or on my socials. By the way, I do have an Instagram, private Instagram, which is also public. I know it sounds weird, but that's where I share behind the scenes, my life as it unfolds, time with my cat Sheru, and so much more. You can follow me at It's Sadia K, which is ItssaadiaK. Anyways, I keep getting distracted. Lately, I have been scrolling Instagram for inspiration. And honestly, I've come across some incredible voices. That's how I found today's guest. I stopped on her profile when she posted this raw, honest video about what was happening in Iran back in June.
Not to fall for the story that this is about civilizing uncivilized people. All of these things, this normalization, is meant to make you forget that there are human beings living in these buildings. Human beings like my cousins who live to play music and sing, to create, who have dreams for their children just like I have dreams for mine. Like my uncle and aunt who are so loving and hilarious and have earned the right to a peaceful time as they age.
Something about the way she spoke, so direct, so grounded, it just hit me. I knew I had to reach out. Her name is Maury Fontanez. She's an intuitive life and leadership guide, a speaker and author, and really someone who helps people stop outsourcing their power and learn to trust their own inner voice. She really connects you with your intuition. The fun part is, I've always been someone who feels connected to my intuition, but it was such a pleasure to speak with somebody who sees intuition more than a soft skill, because at the end of the day, it really is a superpower. After listening to this episode, I promise you will learn something very interesting about your inner voice and how it can help you discover self. I can't wait for you to meet her. So let's get started. Welcome to Immigrantly. And I just discovered your name, Morvarid, which is beautiful. It's Persian. And you said it means pearl.
Yes.
Who named you? Your dad or your mom?
My mom.
Your mom. Oh, that's so nice. So in Pakistan, we have a lot of Persian names. We have Arabic names as well. The one that is extremely common is Shireen.
Oh, yeah. That means sweet.
There are a lot of Shireens, yeah, in Pakistan. But I had never heard Morvarid, but it's so beautiful. Just the sound of it is so melodic. So today we are going to talk about intuition. Where do we even start? First of all, full disclosure, I am self-proclaimed intuitive person. So I feel like I've always connected with my intuition. But we'll start with your intuition and how you connected with it. You call it a superpower. So it's not a soft skill in your mind. And I want to go back to where it all started. So you're a child of immigrants. You've discussed how your mother's struggle as a single immigrant shaped both your resilience and a limiting belief that suffering was inevitable. How did intuition play a role in recognizing and breaking that internal narrative?
Yeah, what a great question. I'm going to take it just up one level. Really, what changed things for me was being reminded of my higher self. And I'll get into what that means in a second. But the way that our higher self communicates with us is through intuition. So really, I think that what's life-changing about this work is the reminder that we are not our fear, that we are not our painful experiences, that we are not our trauma, that those are experiences that have happened to us to help shape us and expand us, often in painful ways, but that they're happening in accordance with our purpose, whatever we're meant to do in the world. You know, we have experiences ourselves, because if you don't experience it, how can you be a teacher, a healer, a guide, a leader, unless you've been there? That's the way I look at those kinds of experiences. But from those experiences, our fear self, which is our very tangible human self, who is, you know, a fight or flight species trying to survive, that self is going to create some belief systems about the pain that you were in and try to remind you constantly, you know, this could happen. You could be disappointed. Look at what happened to mom. Or all of a sudden, money could run out. Look how much suffering there could be without money, to try to constantly prepare you. And these are younger parts of ourselves that had those experiences, who believe it's their job to protect us. And they repeat these stories constantly. Many of us just live in that consciousness for a very long time. We believe that that's it. What is transformative is the reminder, and I say reminder, because it's not that we don't know, it's that we've forgotten, the reminder of who we are really, which is this higher self. And the way I like to describe higher self to people is, imagine your soul choosing to come to this plane to have experiences to grow from, and it takes the form of your body. It comes into your body, right? Think about that soul sort of splitting, and the part that comes down here and goes into your body really has the human experiences of being here. While the other part, same essence, same soul, is sort of on a mountaintop. It's at a higher frequency, and it's there to watch you and guide you and nudge you. So the human part of your soul is now in the forest, right? You're like, can't see the next step. Things can feel clouded. Things can feel contracted and limited. We can get into this illusion of fear because we're here and we're experiencing things tangibly. But the part of us that doesn't experience things tangibly is able to, from a higher frequency, guide us. And what does it want? It wants us to live out our purpose, the reason that we're here, which means we all have natural gifts, talents, and things that we're enthusiastic about,
Those are the three clues around your purpose that we're meant to use here for the highest good of ourselves and others. So it's interested in you living your purpose. It's interested then by default in you achieving your desires. Your desires are not an accident. They are intelligent. When I say intelligent, what I mean is when you want something, I want you to know that that's a clue from your higher consciousness that you're meant to go towards it. Because when you want something, you go towards it. And in the doing of that, you do your purpose naturally. You don't have to think about it very much. So it wants you to get your desires, and then it wants you to feel dignified. And so I'll get back to answering your question. It's not about intuition changing my life. It's about being able to communicate with that higher self through intuition. So the way that it's sending you signals is through those nudges, through that knowing sense. And in listening to that knowing self, I became very aware, oh, I am more than these fear stories. And that's what's life-changing.
So basically, the intuition is the messenger. The higher self is what you want to communicate with, and you use intuition as a tool to connect with the higher self, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I have a lot of questions.
Sure.
First, about the fear, right? Now, you draw a clear distinction between fear and intuition. Fear being reactive, while intuition is this calmer, more grounded self. But for me, Maury, I wonder if it's really that neat. Like sometimes my fear really nudges me towards my intuition. It warns me of danger or makes me pause and look inwards, really inwards. And those are the moments when I connect with my intuition. And it has happened to me so many times where something cloaked as fear has nudged me in that direction. So I wonder if fear and intuition can maybe sometimes work together rather than exist in opposition always.
Yeah, what you're describing is when your intuition is letting you know about something urgent or potentially dangerous. It's still your intuition when you say your fear nudges you towards something. How do you feel in those moments?
I feel scared. I feel as if I were not to act on my intuition or my inner voice, something wrong would happen. So there is this sense of urgency, but it's also this very palpable fear that I can feel through my body. And if I didn't feel that, I would probably not listen to my inner voice, which to me, I know this is so bizarre, but that's how I see
why your fear is triggering your intuition, because you have decided that one needs the other. That's a decision you've made. So because you have chosen this system, then the fear and the intuition are entangled. But what if I were to tell you, you don't need the fear, you'd still hear the warning, but you wouldn't have to feel afraid in your body. That fight or flight response is your survival mode trying to get your attention. What you have decided, because our consciousness chooses our reality. So what you have chosen is that the fear is going to get your attention and then you will listen. You can also equally choose that you don't need the fear and that you will listen anyway and start to explore your relationship to your intuition without the fear. But because you've chosen the fear version in, that's going to be the way it's going to show up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I keep going back to why is it bad? Maybe for me as a person, the way I am, the way I interact with the world, the way I become conscious or aware of my surroundings, because I do have anxiety, right? I feel like fear in a way becomes a gateway to that intuitive clarity, right? And so fear becomes a friend in some ways. And I'm not talking about fear that's almost crippling. I'm talking about fear that, again, nudges you in that direction. But I wonder if not fear, as you said, what other emotion would, you know, come into play for me to have that intuitive understanding of where I need to go and how I need to engage.
Yeah, I will say what I'm getting for you is that fear has been a tool ancestrally for you, which is why it's hard for you to distinguish, because for many of us, when in our family line or our ancestral line, there has been trauma or moments of deep suffering, fear is handed down to us as a strategy for survival. And that is very cellular in who we are. And so it's hard for us to even pick it apart from our true selves, because we have been handed genetically this code that says, here's how you survive. And that happens to a lot of us. So I will just say to you again, that when you describe fear as being your friend, what is possible for you, what wants to be known for you, is there is also a way without the suffering that fear creates, because fear creates suffering. We're not at a stasis. We're not in a parasympathetic place when there's fear. Our blood pressure spikes, our heart rate spikes, our system is uncomfortable. That's just physically. Then emotionally, we are uncomfortable. Energetically, fear is highly draining as an energy on your life force. And so the message for you here is, I believe that I can be safe without suffering, or I believe that I can thrive without suffering. And when we have the story, suffering is necessary for survival, that is an ancestral limiting belief that we've been handed to us in a genetic code. Actually, scientists have found that when you study the DNA of rats that they've done this kind of test with, if they shock a rat in one generation, there's a dent in the DNA code that gets passed down generationally to, you know, four generations down of those rats. So the actual genetic code is denting with the trauma response. And so it's really enlightening for your consciousness to begin to hear suffering is not the only way for survival. But if it believes that it is, then fear is going to be essential to your operating system. What you asked me was, is there another way? Absolutely. But if you believe it, then it's true. So if you believe that there is another way, it can present itself. And the truth about receiving intuitive information, if is nothing else, is that intuition is emotionally neutral. There's no emotion attached to intuition. That means when we are connected to our deepest sense of knowing, when we are connected, even if the information is unpleasant, and I have been there many times, it comes in very factually. Now, it doesn't mean that your fear doesn't then grab it and start to make up its own stories about it, right? That's how they can begin to interact with one another, because your fear is very smart. It is a adapted, evolved survival mechanism. But your intuition, the minute that you sense something, that instant is emotionally neutral.
It's very interesting as I'm deconstructing the conversation. First, I do think that the fear part in me is inherent anxiety, which I've had since childhood. I don't really conflate it or correlate it to my ancestral trauma or suffering in my family. Because when I go back to my childhood, I had a very simple, mundane, pleasant childhood where I can't really connect with any childhood memories that would, you know, evoke certain kind of responses. I feel like as an immigrant living in this country, I felt a lot more, I wouldn't even call it trauma, Maury, because I just feel there are so many terms that are recklessly used. I don't think it is a trauma for me, but it's been ebbs and flows that I've experienced as an immigrant, as a Muslim immigrant, as a Pakistani American immigrant in this country. And maybe that's where my anxiety peaks. I was always an anxious person, but having lived in a country that's in most instances not as conducive to your identity and how they interact with you, maybe that's what triggers it. But I do want to go back to the idea of intuition. You just said intuition is neutral. Now, intuition to me, I feel like intuition has such an endearing quality about it. And that's probably because I grew up in an Eastern culture, because intuition in different cultures is different, right? How it's perceived, how people interact with it. For instance, in Western cultures, a lot of times people prioritize rationality and control, and intuition is almost quelled. While in cultures like mine, I feel like there is this sense of wisdom and experience that's embodied naturally through intuition. Have you seen those differences as someone who's spoken, worked globally, is a kid of immigrants? Have you seen differences in how people connect with intuition, say, in Iran?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I really relate to that experience of a lot of anxiety coming from just being an immigrant or a child of an immigrant in this country. Because when you don't feel belonging, you know, we have three basic needs as humans: dignity, love, and belonging. When you don't feel belonging, there is an inherent, and I know we don't love this word, but trauma in that. Trauma just meaning an experience that caused harm or pain, period. I believe, and I know, and I've read, and it's been, you know, very well documented and spoken about, that Eastern cultures and Eastern religions have a deeper relationship to intuition. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, contributing factors to it. I will say one of them is that some of those cultures have been around longer. And so there is this wisdom in this ancient existence where our ancestors been there, done that. They doubted it. They were cynical. They did, right? And then it's been around so long, it's just a knowing part of you as a culture, is that this is just something we all have. I think it's more discussed in certain cultures, in Iranian culture. Talking about your gut feeling is very common. It's a saying that's bedelam oftade. It means it has occurred to my heart. And it's just a way of saying, this is my intuition right now. And I will say that in our culture, when someone says that, you pay attention. It's not an eye roll. It's not a, ooh, they've got to convince. And they don't have the embodiment of doubt or shame when they say it. It's said with a lot of confidence. Bedelam oftade, you're going to get this job. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, I respect that. So I think there's also an inherent respect for it, because it's done in a way that's so inherent and ingrained in the language and the culture that there's no doubt or shame about it. And I think Western religions, Western cultures can be slightly more linear. Obviously, they're newer in the long trajectory of history. And also, I think if you bring it to the context of the United States, you know, we really exist in this evidence-based hustle culture, where what you produce is your value. And so if it's not tangible, I think that this culture is young enough that it hasn't learned to value the intangible quite yet. I think we're on a precipice, and I'm seeing change happen. But I think that because of that need for productivity and tangible evidence, there's a harder time with intuition. And then what you hear is, when people talk about it here, there's a little shyness, there's a little shame, there's a little not wanting to admit it. Whereas my purpose is, let's bring it into the boardroom. And I do. I mean, when I'm working with CEOs and companies, I'll say the word intuition so much, and then I'll laugh, because a year later, I'll be talking to the CEO or watching him present, and he'll say, you know, what I'm intuiting is, and it's like, that's it. All I want is for it to become a pragmatic part of our culture here.
How are leaders learning or latching on to this notion of intuition practically? What are some of the practical ways they incorporate intuition into business? Because everything is about, you know, money and profitability and the bottom line, where does intuition fit into that narrative? Yeah, there's three things I'm really seeing
with leaders. One is it's permission to start with self instead of running around trying to create your opinion based off of consensus. So, you know, it's not about only listening to yourself, but it's giving leaders permission to begin with self. What is this thing that I feel deeply within me? And then number two, taking intuition and then using data to verify it. So, you know, I talk a lot to my clients about like, look, the scientific process itself has intuition inherent in it. Because what is a hypothesis? It's just a knowing. It's a feeling. Oh, there's gravity. I think there's gravity. Okay, now I'm going to go try and prove that to be true. So in the business setting, what we talk a lot about is when you have this knowing, then you go and you seek the data to verify your knowing. Is our customer actually starting to change their taste level? You know, is the employee that we're trying to recruit actually now caring less about purpose than they used to 10 years ago? That's just a gut I have. Now we're looking for data to understand it. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is it's really creating an openness in the cultures I work with, the corporate cultures, to allow others to also share what they're sensing or what their gut feeling is prior to a crisis happening. So I used to do and still do crisis management for 2 decades. And when we would go into a crisis, and even now when I selectively work on crises, and I will ask people, what did you feel before? Almost every time the employees will say, well, I had a gut feeling about this. Well, why didn't you speak up? Well, how am I going to speak up? What am I going to say? I don't have any evidence. So the third business application is just starting to use that gut as a indicator of what might be coming.
A precursor.
And prepare for it.
Have there been instances where you've seen businesses integrate intuition seamlessly into their decision-making as opposed to instances where it was hidden or dismissed?
I think that it depends on the leader and it also depends on the industry. I work a lot in the fashion and beauty industry, and I will say in those sectors, a lot of the creative directors or CEOs at a fashion house or a beauty line are just naturally using their intuition. And no one blinks twice about it. You know, it's just channeling creativity is about being in touch with your intuition. You're intuiting the thing you're designing, the next color you're making. And again, remember, then you can pair that with data. Are we seeing that indigo is doing well this season? Yes. So there are certain industries where I think the more creative the industry, the more naturally intuition is just accepted. It's not maybe you don't use that word, but people will more naturally accept if something occurs to someone that they see as being brilliant or a genius or connected in some way. So I think that, you know, it depends on the leader. It depends on the industry. And I will say, I find that the male CEOs I work with and coach seem to be more comfortable just making decisions based on a gut feeling. Yeah, I think that they do it more than we realize. That they're just sensing something and they'll do the thing. They'll make the decision. The difference is men don't feel that they have to ask for permission or explain themselves. Hearing the process the way you might with a female.
Right. Are there any industries you think intuition as a phenomenon will be least effective? No. Has your intuition ever let you down?
No.
Never. What's been the most eye-opening, challenging interaction you've had with your intuition where you had to give into your intuition?
Oh, but so many things. I mean, I write about this in my book. My first marriage was a continuous dismissal of my intuition repeatedly until the shit hit the fan and there was no not listening to it anymore. In my career, there's been moments where I've stopped listening and been, you know, really sent in a direction that, again, there are no mistakes, but sometimes we have to learn lessons. And sometimes when you don't listen to your intuition, that learning phase of the lesson just takes longer. So there have been plenty of times, you know, where I have had a feeling about a supervisor who was giving me guidance and who I knew, you know, what if I keep listening to this person, it's going to harm the client or the project or myself. And I, out of fear of not wanting to be seen as too much or inconvenient or, you know, speaking up too much, I would go along with and end up, you know, my intuition being right. You know, we'd get fired by the client or members of the team would quit. So there's been a lot of times that I haven't listened as well. And I just have learned to use those things as evidence in my internal log. Here's what happens when you listen. Here's what happens when you don't listen. So that next time you're tempted by fear not to listen, you can actually look at the evidence because our brains love evidence and say, actually, when I've listened, this has been the outcome. And it's always been in my best interest and the best interest of others.
Is that not contradictory to the notion of tuition itself? Like, if we are looking for evidence or data, then it's counterproductive to that inner voice or higher self that we are trying to connect, because the idea itself is so abstract and elusive in a way. It is this gut feeling, as you said in the beginning, that happens. But if we go searching for data or evidence to prove or disprove, then are we not undermining the idea itself?
The goal is for humanity to understand that we have this ability and we have access to these answers and that we can begin to trust ourselves. How we go about understanding it, there's no judgment about us needing evidence. We are tangible beings and we require evidence. So whatever we are guided by, however you believe, whatever your system of belief is, what I'm here to say is that no one's judging you about how you go about understanding your intuition. So if you need to go back and look for evidence, then, and that's going to make you trust your intuition, we love it. Do it. Whatever the process looks like that makes you trust yourself more, that is the right process for you.
So what if I have a strong gut feeling or intuition and I'm like, you know, I feel it's going to happen or this is the direction I should be going in. I am an evidence-based person, hypothetically speaking. I don't find the evidence and I decide not to follow it.
Could define evidence a little better. There? I think that when I talk about evidence, what I'm saying to you is I want you to think of two times. In your life where you had a gut feeling and you listened to it, what happened? What was the outcome then? That's the evidence that I'm asking you to present to yourself, is knowing when I listened, I did this thing, and then down the line, this or that occurred, which tells me from an evidence standpoint, listening to my intuition is good for me, or it gets me to a place that's better for me. I think what you're asking about is instant results. That's a different thing. Is that what you're asking? Is like, if you intuit something and you don't immediately see it happen, should you doubt it? Oh, okay.
Not immediately, but down the line, if it doesn't happen, like, because in my mind, and again, this goes back to coming from a culture where it's either the intuition, like either you'll follow that gut feeling or you won't. Like for me, I don't need evidence to go in that direction. But as you said, everybody is different. Some people need evidence, others don't. For me, again, this idea of gut is so intuitive in itself. If I am going to go with my gut, then I don't need an evidence. This is the feeling. This is what I'm getting. And I will just trust it completely. I'm a believer. And that's where I sometimes think that in obviously Western cultures, I'm not an expert on this. I'm somebody who practices it. I can really see how some people who may be hesitant to believe in the idea of intuition or connecting with higher self may have doubts and they may look for evidence whether how their intuition worked in certain situations and then projecting on to a different situation, which to me is very intriguing, right? Because again, in my mind, intuition is being a believer through and through?
Yeah, I mean, it's different for everyone. Intuition shows up in our body, in our emotions, by being neutral, and in our energy. And so it becomes about an exploration in yourself. Hey, when I have a knowing out of nowhere, what happens in my body? Do I feel my heart racing? Do I feel my fingers tingling? Is it a tingling in my stomach? That's where the gut feeling concept comes from. So, you know, it has to be an individual exploration around what happens in your body when you start to just feel like you know something. What happens in your energy? Do you notice that you're more peaceful? Do you notice you're more energized? The number one way to decipher is if I'm scared, if I'm angry, if I'm sad, if I'm nervous, that's not my intuition. So learning to identify the thought that is the most neutral and distinguish, okay, I have a thought, I feel the neutrality of it. Do I feel it in my body? Yep, here's where I feel it in my body. There's the tangible signature that it has. But I think, again, for the cynics, I've never been proven wrong, but I'm always open to it. Every time I ask someone, open your journal, spend 5 minutes, write down a moment in time in your past where you knew something, where you knew you needed to do something or didn't do something or whatever it is, write that down. And then now write, what was the outcome of that? That moment for cynics is powerful because it's a reminder, oh, this is a system that's happening in me that I'm not even thinking about. And so there it is. I can see the proof that that system exists and that it is working for me.
How do you connect with your intuition? What is the physiological indicator for you?
It changes. It can sometimes feel like excitement. I can feel a sense of, you know, something rising in me. I have worked so much with it that it feels like just a second voice that I'm really connected to, but I am human like the rest of us. And so I can be in moments of deep anxiety or fear and not hear it at all for stretches of time because of whatever it is I'm processing through that's making so much noise that it doesn't leave room. You know, what your intuitive self loves the most, what your higher self loves the most is quiet so that it can communicate, so that it can break through. And when your mind is busy, when your mind is racing through all the things that could go wrong or all the things that you need to do or all the ways that it's not going to work out or all the ways it wants to prepare you for the disappointment that's coming one day that, by the way, usually never shows up. When your mind is busy, your higher self is speaking, but it can't break through that noise. And so if you can find a way, and this is what I try to do, to quiet the mind, whether that's breathing, there's a breathing technique I teach people, or going for a walk. This helps me a lot. I live by the ocean. Being by the ocean helps. The minute I quiet my mind, I can hear it.
In today's world, Maury, the way things are happening, we see a genocide unfolding in Gaza. There's so much death, destruction, even famine. How important is intuition for connectivity with other humans? Can we develop more love and compassion through it?
Absolutely. It's such a good question because, you know, in my immense sense of powerlessness as I look at Gaza and Palestine and the rest of the world, but particularly my attention has been there. I feel so powerless. And then what I do is I feel the love that I feel for the people there, the genuine, immense desire to protect and send love. And I feel that in my system. And I know that energy, again, while not tangible, is potent. And so for me, what I can do the most besides posting very actively and getting involved and protesting and taking action, which I do, is energetically be with them. Make sure that my heart is open and that I'm sending what is in my system to them because we are all connected and that energy matters. That might not traditionally be looked at as the word intuition, which is why I say that word can feel so limited, but it is about energy. It is about connection. It is about sending nonverbal energy at people. And intuition is a similar process, right? It's a nonverbal communication. And so I think that more than anything right now, we need to remember that we are connected to one another. And we need to feel that connection in our bodies, in our system. We need to remind ourselves that if it's happening to them, it's happening to us, and to feel that and allow ourselves to feel it. I think so many people are so afraid to feel it because it's so devastating. But that is what is present right now. That is what is real. And so if that is the experience, let us experience it with them. It's okay to feel sad and heartbroken that people are dying and starving. It's okay.
And in the end, Maury, if you were to describe the United States of America in the context of its relationship with intuition, how would you do that?
I would describe it as a toddler who's finally finding its legs and learning how to get sturdy and walk. I don't think we're running. I don't think we're flying. I think that we are starting to, as a country, figure it out, starting to get curious. Is this real? Oh, okay, maybe it does work. I think there are plenty of historic, well-preserved systems that work against our intuition. There are systems that tell us not to trust ourselves. There are systems to tell us to trust our fear self more than our knowing self, because when you're in fear, you're easier to control. And I think we're seeing that in our country more than anything right now, is fear of otherness, fear of failure and of suffering being capitalized upon to further divide us from one another. And my hope is that that knowing within each of us, and that's what my work is about, will turn on like a beacon and will remember that we are not fear and that we are this knowing, loving.
And one thing about intuition that surprised you the most?
It is so easily verified and validated if you just say it out loud. You know, I will be in sessions where I will just know, I'll say something and I'll just see in the person's face, like, how could you know that? And that is such a good feeling, that even for someone like me who teaches it, writes about it, uses it in my work, that moment of recognition in someone's face that the thing you intuited was spot on is so energizing. And you need to be looking for that, that kind of, you know, I was telling my daughter the other day, she's like, oh, I had a gut feeling this is going to happen, but I didn't want to say it out loud. And I said, Raina, you have to say it out loud because that shows your trust and faith in it. And when you say it out loud, it can be verified back to you. And then you build more belief in it. And if you believe in it, then you hear it more loudly.
Where can people find your book?
You can find it anywhere you buy books. It's called Higher Self, Reclaiming the Power of Your Intuition. You can find it on Amazon or anywhere you buy books. And then you can follow me at Maury Fontanez on Instagram, and you'll hear about what I'm up to.
Wonderful. This was great. Thank you so much, Maury, for your time.
Thank you, Sadia, for reaching out. It was a lovely conversation.
So here's what I have decided. I am going to try to parse out my fear from my intuition. Maybe I can use another emotion to nudge me. And you know what Maury said? I should say it out loud. I don't need fear to connect with my emotions or my intuition. This episode was produced by me, Sadia Khan, written by me. The editorial review is done by Shay Yu. Our sound designer and editor is Lou Raskin. Immigrantly's theme music is by Simon Hutchinson. Other music by Epidemic Sound. Come back next week for another important conversation. Until then, try to connect with your intuition and tell me how it worked or didn't work.